It's good to be home. After 2,000 long miles, it was good to pull back into the driveway and be back here where we belong. I got to thinking about what to talk about on this Labor Day weekend, and some of the things that I noticed in reading the papers and so on as we traveled across our country were, I saw a common theme that people in this country seem to be finding their workloads, their obligations heavier than ever. With school starting and so many other activities starting, the pace of life may be taking its toll. Before we even start, we're left feeling drained and exhausted, kind of empty. The fast-paced life has the ability to work against the joy and the purpose of living. I had a man say to me the other day, he said, I recognize that it takes a lot of integrity to know whether I'm really tired or just lazy. But often when it's only Tuesday, I'm exhausted all the way to Friday. At work, I'm usually done before the day ends. For some of us, our days have become longer and more complex, and we find ourselves rushing constantly from one activity to the next. One of my favorite preachers, the late Dr. Norman Vincent Peale, once pointed out that people live such crowded lives that we no longer see them sleeping, even in church. I can see it up here. The hectic, fast-paced lifestyle of our day and age has become the norm, I think, for so many. Unfortunately, I think the result is that we become numb to people. We become numb to the experiences happening around us. We have a difficult time appreciating some of the people and events around us because we're moving so quickly. We don't take note of God's presence and some of the spiritual resources that abound. The result of this fast life is emptiness and worry. That's the setting for the gospel lesson that I chose for this morning. Now, if you're not familiar with the gospels and you missed a few of the weeks in August, let me remind you that Mark is that gospel writer that moves quickly. He moves at a frantic, quick pace. The gospel writer depicts Jesus as one who is moving from place to place very quickly, teaching here and healing there. Casting out a demon in one sequence and telling that paralytic to pick up his pallet and walk in the next. Jesus is moving all the way through Mark with this immediacy from task to task. And I've been working on this summer in my own study. It's narrated with this furious intensity from the perspective of Mark's writer. But one thing that I noticed that made me stop in my tracks was suddenly we come to this new story that Pat read from Mark 9 about a mysterious encounter on a mountain where Jesus is transfigured. Following this incident on the mountain, Jesus goes back to his rapid pace of healing and teaching and admonishing and serving. Made me think. The story seems totally out of place. It doesn't belong here. Mark has been so rapid and frantic. Why would the writer insert this story here in the midpoint of his gospel? Well, I think it happened for a reason. He wanted to give the followers of Jesus a glimpse of the future. He recognized that Jesus' ministry was fast-paced. And the disciples may not have totally understood his message and his ministry. But the transfiguration was something out of the ordinary that was meant to give a glimpse of that future glory of the Christ. In other words, the story of the Transfiguration is a story of hope. It's meant to give Christians a sense of hope and purpose in a frantic and a frenzied world. This story in the Gospel is one of those kind of amusing stories to read from our perspective as modern Christians. Because the disciples who are with Jesus don't seem to have a clue as to what's going on. Peter begins to babble about building some sort of temporary shelter, and Mark gently explains that the apostle really didn't know what to say. They're baffled and bewildered by some of the things that Jesus has been talking about and doing prior to this story of the Transfiguration. Now, this incident makes things even more mind-boggling. The apostles know that something extraordinary is taking place and that they're standing there on holy ground. But then again, it was something totally out of the ordinary for these men. It was nearly impossible to describe in words the event that took place on that mountain with Jesus and Moses and Elijah. The story of the Transfiguration is an important one for us because it points us once again at a different time of the year to Easter and to the Easter message. The Transfiguration gave these disciples a glimpse of the glory that awaited Christ. It served as a kind of advance notice of the resurrection power of God. And for us, this story helps assure us that God's power and presence are real, even though we may not fully understand it. We gain this glimpse of the resurrection that keeps us going in good times and in difficult ones. Although those three disciples didn't really get what took place on the mountain, what they saw gave them something to hold on to. The pace of their lives with Jesus would stay frantic and hectic, but they were given something that would bring hope and assurance for their future. In the same way, we don't understand fully, but we're given something to bring us hope as well. You see, the Transfiguration served as an intermission in a way, in the frantic pace of Jesus' ministry. It gave the disciples the chance to catch hold of that presence of God in their lives and in this experience that they were in together. In being with Jesus on the mountain, the disciples had a new hope that helped them to see things differently. They saw things with more purpose and meaning. And we have opportunities to experience the Transfiguration every day in our lives, when we recognize God's presence, when we recognize God's love for us, and we shut up and listen. Now, many of us today have surely been battered and bruised. Life at times has lost its glitter and delight. Sometimes we sit down and we listen to the news and think that the future is not very bright. We don't like what we see on the horizon. Maybe you can identify with this story told by Dr. John Killinger, one of our congregational brethren. He says this: there was a man in a hotel room who was too depressed to go downstairs, even to eat in the restaurant. He just lay on his bed. He was a Canadian, and he was the chairman of a shipping company. He'd always been fastidious, worrying about everything in his life, and now at midlife, his anxiety had gotten the best of him, even to the extent that it was difficult for him to eat and sleep. He worried about everything: his business, his investments, his family, even his dogs. Then one day in the hotel, filled with anxiety, immobilized in bondage, unable to leave his room, he said, "I just laid across the bed and I moaned out loud, 'Life isn't worth living this way. I wish I were dead.'" And then he began to think. He wondered, what would God think if he heard him talking that way? And he said, "God, it's a joke, isn't it? Life is a joke." It occurred to him that was the first time that he had talked to God since he was a little boy. And he lay there on the bed and he began to pray. I just talked out loud about what a mess my life was in, and how tired I was, and how much I wanted things to be different in my life. And you know what happened? I heard a voice say, "It doesn't have to be that way. That's all." So I sat straight up and I looked around, but it didn't happen again. I laughed at myself. I thought I was hearing things. But then I was certain that I heard it. "It doesn't have to be that way." Well, the man went home and he talked with his wife about what had happened. And he also talked with his brother who was a minister. And he helped him to understand what had happened. In a few days, the man phoned his brother and said, "It really happened. I've done it. I'm changed. I'm a new man." Well, you know, he still has business problems and he still has to work hard. But things are different. During the week, he leaves the office at some point during the day and he goes to a nearby church and he sits in a pew alone in silence, kind of like on that high mountain. And he prays. "It clears my head," he said. "It reminds me of whose I am. It's a transfiguration because of those words. It doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to live that way. In this modern world, it doesn't have to be that way. Although we may not slow down as much as that might help our lives, we do have opportunities every day to experience the transfigured Christ and catch a glimpse of a hopeful, a meaningful future for our world. I know that there are many people who come here today with bruises and pains and hurts and scars from the past. I know that some of us feel that life is a great burden sometimes, weighing us down with responsibilities and obligations. But it doesn't have to be that way. Sometimes it's those glimpses of hope provided by Christ that keep us moving forward and onward. When nothing else seems to bring encouragement and purpose to our existence. But here is where we learn that there is always hope, that life can be transformed, that life can be changed. The Transfiguration is a glimpse towards Easter. And you know, our congregational forebears believed strongly that every Sunday worship service was a celebration of the resurrection. Every Sunday was Easter. knowing that the power of Easter can affect our hectic and bruised lives. It's something that keeps us moving forward. That power was summed up so beautifully by Julia Ward Howe in our closing hymn for today. And let me close with her words. In the beauty of the lilies, Christ was born across the sea, with a glory in his bosom that transfigures you and me. Amen.